Good morning, Bill Lynch with the CBS World News Roundup. Last New Year's Day, Ronald Reagan and Mikhail Gorbachev, still feeling the warmth of their fireside summit in Geneva a few weeks earlier, delivered upbeat messages to each other's countrymen. This year, as Ann Anderson reports, the chill of Reykjavik has led Moscow to say niet to a rerun.
The Soviet Union has turned down a request from the United States for an exchange of New Year's messages between Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev and President Reagan. Soviet Foreign Ministry spokesman Gennady Gerasimov, in announcing the Kremlin's decision, said the situation with the U.S. is far from favorable. He speaks here through an interpreter.
We have no basis for the exchange of such New Year messages. We should make joint efforts to correct the situation and to have a foundation for optimism.
The foreign ministry said the U.S. had ignored proposals made at Reykjavik, violated the SALT II agreement, and refused to join in the moratorium on nuclear weapons tests. Ann Anderson for CBS News, Moscow.
Soviet expert Jonathan Sanders, a consultant for CBS News, says the 1986 New Year's exchange now appears to have been a one-shot deal.
It shows that the better relations between the two leaders have gone down, and what it is it's a non-event. The news is that it's not happening. It would have been very significant if it happened again. It would be an important tradition. The Soviet people got to see that Ronald Reagan was not a maniac with a gun, not a pistol-packing mama.
There's a report this morning that Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, a pivotal figure in the Iran-Contra affair, has claimed the idea to divert Iranian arms sale profits to Nicaraguan rebels came originally from Israel. The New York Times reports Attorney General Meese told Congress that's what North told him in an interview. But as Don McNeil reports, that version isn't selling in Israel.
The Israeli government continues to emphatically deny any connection to or any knowledge of the diversion of money from Iranian arms sales to the Contras. Israel's name has come up again, reportedly in U.S. congressional testimony, in which it was said that Colonel Oliver North claimed the whole idea came from an Israeli. One name mentioned repeatedly is David Kimke, former Director General of the Foreign Ministry here. Kimke calls the whole thing ridiculous. If that is what Oliver North testified to, he said, then he is an unmitigated liar. Kimke and the Israeli government do admit to being involved in the arms sales to Iran, but say their involvement stopped at that point. Officials here continue to watch developments in Washington uneasily, fearing that new disclosures may damage Israel's close relation with the United States. If an Israeli official did participate in the Contra funding scheme, then this country would have contravened U.S. law, and theoretically, U.S. foreign aid could be curtailed. Don McNeil, CBS News, Tel Aviv.
The Japanese cabinet today okayed a nearly $22 billion defense budget. Gordon Joseloff reports that in so doing, the Nakasone government surpassed a symbolic threshold.
By the way U.S. and NATO planners count things, Japanese defense spending long ago had broken through the symbolic ceiling of 1% of GNP. But not until today did Prime Minister Nakasone's government feel confident enough to approve a budget that, by Japanese measure, exceeded the politically sensitive threshold. The conservative Nakasone, who led his party to a landslide parliamentary election victory last summer, has long favored expansion and improvement of Japan's military capabilities. Japan has observed the 1% rule since 1976. Opposition parties led by the socialists said the limit was an effective, if symbolic, deterrent to Japan ever again becoming a military power. The socialists quickly denounced the government action today, calling it a reckless move. Gordon Joseloff, CBS News, Tokyo.
The government of Thailand is closing down Ka Idang, the large Cambodian refugee camp once called home by many people who are now U.S. citizens. Rick Fredrickson reports.
During its peak, Ka Idang was the second largest city of Cambodians in the world, with a population of 147,000. 24,000 remain, and tomorrow Thailand will begin to shut down the facility. The Bangkok government says it has shouldered the refugee burden for more than a decade and is growing impatient as Western countries have rejected most of the remaining people for resettlement. The U.S. says many of them worked for the ruthless Khmer Rouge. So the Thais are relocating them to other bamboo camps that already house 250,000 Cambodians. An American relief worker opposed to the closing calls it the end of an era. What was a sign of hope and compassion, he says, is now just the opposite. Rick Fredrickson for CBS News, Bangkok.
In Hong Kong today, touring Oregon Senator Mark Hatfield blamed bureaucratic delays for the U.S. failure to honor a commitment to resettle thousands of Vietnamese refugees. Many have been in camps for more than 4 years. Exxon, the world's biggest oil company, has joined the growing list of multinational corporations pulling out of South Africa. Exxon said it has sold its affiliates there to a local trust for an undisclosed price. But Randall Robinson of the anti-apartheid organization Trans-Africa says the true impact remains to be seen.
If this pullout means that Exxon will no longer supply oil and petroleum to South Africa, then it's important. But if it is consistent with pullouts like those of IBM and General Motors, where the corporation simply sells to local buyers and continues to supply product, then it will not be meaningful.
An Exxon spokeswoman in New York said she didn't know whether the company would continue to sell its products in South Africa. The influential Johannesburg Business Day newspaper today demanded that the government release one of its black reporters arrested yesterday or put him on trial. A private funeral is planned for British statesman Harold Macmillan. He died yesterday at 92. An architect of the U.S. New Right movement is dead after a long illness. Terry Dolan was 36. He co-founded the National Conservative Political Action Committee.